Welcome to New Lens with Common Good Capital, where we talk with investors, RIAs, fund managers, and philanthropists about their experiences within different impact investing themes, as well as explore the power of stewardship and capital. I'm your host, Jeff Schaefer. I'm here today with Mike Spraggins. Mike, welcome.
Thank you.
Normally, I give an introduction to people. I'm gonna leave the introductions really light on this because I want to set the context. Since you and I, full transparency, are in a partnership together with Fortis Green, and that's how we, well, that's not how we met, but so I know fully you and you know fully me. And I wanted people to hear you because you come at Africa specifically and business in a unique way. And we want our listeners to hear people who are not just talking about doing things, but are doing things. And that is you in a nutshell around multiple things. So start off, give us a little background of where'd you grow up and then high level your career.
Thanks, Jeff, for having me. I grew up here in Orlando, Florida, and was educated as an accountant. Went to Auburn University and then went to a big accounting firm, one of the Big Eight, kind of out of school. Anyway, from there, joined my father in a small family business that sold carpeting here in Orlando with about a dozen employees. And so started in a small business environment and began to grow that over time. That was in the 90s. And then through the 2000s or in the late 90s, I bought my father out and really tried to grow that business and diversify it and expand it. And really, it's from those roots that I learned how to be a small businessman first and an entrepreneur. And those have carried over my entire career.
So you view business maybe different than most people. You're very intentional, not only about the business, but how it fits in strategically to your vision. And I know you don't use these language, but I will kind of change in the world, but in very specific areas.
Right.
Can you kind of summarize how you either think about all the things you're involved in or just give us a little framework so people can understand what's in your brain?
I'm a Christian, right? So I believe that God uses me, that I get to participate with God as he changes the world, right? So that's my worldview. So you have to know that about me first to understand how I look at everything. And so I ask myself questions like, all right, given the cards I've been dealt, how can I be most useful in the world? Really what I'm saying is, how can I be most useful to God as he changes the world? And so that's how I attempt on my best days. That's how I look at my work, right? And you take that, and that's a concept charged from my grandfather when I was young, I'll never forget, which is essentially do good, right? So you take those two things together, and that is what informs how I look at my work, right? That's the theology of my work, if you will. That applies where I work in Florida, and my Florida-based construction supply business is what the carpeting business has become. It applies to what I do in Africa. It applies everywhere I am. And that's behind my work.
So let's jump into the Africa discussion. How long have you been working in Africa?
Yeah, it's about 15 years.
What took you to Africa?
Back in the early aughts, right? 2005, 2006. My core business in Florida was 100% focused on housing supply. So we supplied products to new home builders in Orlando. And then the Great Recession happened, right? So 2007 to 2009. Our business just got wiped. It hit very, very hard. We had to cut 95% of our payroll, seven rounds of layoffs, but the business survived. And what was left in the business was really small. So there was no free cash flow that I could invest, but the core team that was left in the business could do all the work of the business. So essentially what I had was lots of time, but no extra capital, enough to feed my family and really maintain our standard of living, but no extra to invest. And so here I was really praying, God, what do you want me to do? And I got a call from a friend of mine, a guy named Peter Greer, who runs something called Hope International. They're a microfinance NGO. And Peter said he had this idea about taking what they'd learned from microfinance and deploying it into the healthcare space in Africa. He was excited about this idea. And I raised my hand and I'm on the phone. I'll never forget. I'm in the parking lot of my country club and I'm talking to Peter Greer and I said, I'll do it. And he goes, great. You're deputized. You do it. And he said, and besides, I've got an intern I can give you. This woman, Carol Hanselman, who was graduating from Penn. And I had another co-founder in my small group who had just been laid off by CNL, a guy named Jonathan O'Connor. And the three of us came together and started LifeNet.
And so what is the vision behind LifeNet?
To transform African healthcare. And so that was our vision. How do we transform healthcare using essentially business principles? And we started like Peter Drucker would teach you, right? So who is the customer? What does the customer want? What can you bring the customer? We began going back and forth to Africa. Carol moved over the first summer. I started going every 3 months back and forth. Then we raised our first piece of capital from a donor named Raymond Harris, who wrote a $150,000 check to get us going. Jonathan then moved over to Africa. So we began a startup, a bootstrapped capital light startup, trying to innovate and figure out how we can transform African healthcare. This started in a little country called Burundi. So why Burundi, right? Peter picked Burundi, and his hypothesis was that Burundi would follow the development curve of Rwanda. Hmm. Rwanda was a success story even in 2009. The hypothesis would Burundi would follow, but it did not. So Burundi has not developed much. It turned out to be a super difficult country to start in. They spoke French. I mean, all kinds of problems, right? But we started there, and it was very difficult.
So describe for the listeners, what does LifeNet do? What's the model?
So first, we versioned it several times, and we landed on what I now call LifeNet 4.0. So we versioned it. It took a few years, like many startups do. And where we landed on was something that is commonly called conversion franchising. So we take existing clinics and health centers that are owned by churches, and we bring them into our franchise network, i.e. conversion franchise. There are examples of this in the U.S., hardware stores. Back to the carpet business I joined my dad in, it was a conversion franchise of something called Abbey Carpet. So I knew about conversion franchising. And so we take an existing faith-based health center, we pull it into our network, and we give it support. So we give it training, supply chain management, equipment financing, branding and marketing. We take a clinic that is isolated, it's on its own. The boss is essentially a bishop that is located somewhere else who also is responsible for his churches and his schools. And we take that piece of his healthcare world that his community depends on, and we bring it into our network and give it the strength of scale. We have done this. We now have almost 400 locations in six countries throughout Africa, and we support the work of the African church by really outsourced healthcare management.
What kind of statistics or stats do you use to illustrate, well, not to illustrate, but to explain the work that you guys are doing?
So we look at things like patient count. I believe last year, I believe 2023, we may have seen 8 million patients through our facilities. I think the total count is well over 35 million now since inception. We look at lives saved. We look at in delivery, you know, for babies and mothers. That's a key piece of the healthcare picture in sub-Saharan Africa. We go into a health center and we'll do a pre-inspection essentially of their practices, and we'll grade them. And then we implement our interventions, our trainings. And then every 6 months we'll rescore them. And after 3 years, we believe we can double the quality of care in a health center. Mm. And that doubling of quality, we can double the quality of care for less than a dollar a patient visit. We think that is great stewardship and a great return on investment.
So if you were to get us all on a plane and we went and saw one of these locations, can you guess what would be going through our head and what we'd see?
Yes, I can. You would say, wow, these people are very poor. You know, this is, if you hadn't been in that context before, it's shocking. It shocked me, right? So I would go in hospitals in Burundi, and the only analog I could conceive were movies I saw of World War One, you know, in the hospitals of World War One. I mean, not that there was that kind of blood and amputations, but the general conditions of the facility, some of these conditions are very difficult in many of these countries.
So if you all come in and partner with them, you pick it, a year, 2 years, 3 years, how would that, the look and feel of that clinic change over that time period?
So, you know, the condition of these clinics are a continuum. You know, in the more wealthy African countries, such as Kenya, they tend to be much better shape than the poorer countries or the poor districts, as you might imagine. So there's a continuum of these health centers because the local context is very different. You know, South Kivu in the DRC, the Dominican Republic, in the DRC in Congo, is a much poorer area than Bujumbura, Burundi, which is poorer than Kampala, Uganda, which is poorer than Nairobi, right? So there's a continuum of health centers. So we try to take what they're where they are and move them up this continuum of quality. And as they do, what happens are really the medical practices. So the facility changes, looks the same.
Okay.
The people in line waiting to get in look the same. The concrete floors look the same. But the care that's delivered begins to dramatically improve. If you go into the pharmacy, and every clinic will have one, the pharmacy will be better stocked in our facilities because we're able to teach them how to use inventory and purchasing methods and plan ahead on their purchasing so they're not out of stock, to control their budgeting better, to save money so they have the money to buy medicine so they're always in stock. You know, these are basic business practices that we know in the U.S. as business people that we're really just bringing to them. It's standardized training on hand washing. It's standardized inventory management. It's standardized bookkeeping. Taking those elements and combining them dramatically increases the quality of care.
Okay, one more question on LifeNet. Dream, 10 years from now, where's LifeNet?
Being a person who enjoys vision.
I'm going to say, I'm anxious to hear this because you're the dreamer.
Being a person who enjoys, well, it really has to do with technology and what is happening today in the world. And so Elon Musk's Starlink, as you may know, is busy launching low Earth orbit satellites that were covering the globe. I believe that these LEO satellites will provide bandwidth to potential bandwidth to all of our health centers, all the health centers of Africa, which I believe is a game-changing technology. So my vision is that we leverage this new technology and we bring things like two-way video medicine and we bring centralized ERP planning to these health centers, and we can truly build a scaled network of connected health centers all throughout sub-Saharan Africa that numbered in the thousands or even 10,000. And that this connected network will dramatically transform healthcare in Africa. And in that way, Starlink will be able to allow us to leapfrog old technology into new technology, similar to maybe how some developing countries 20 years ago bypassed landlines and went straight to cellular. That's the vision. And two-way video medicine sort of bypasses the need to have excellent training for every health facility to have a doctor, because they don't. We can have doctors in a centralized space that can then communicate real time to the nurses on site, patient facing. And I believe that that combination transforms African healthcare. And that, in my head, is LifeNet 5.0. That's the next step for the organization.
Does the organization always stay a nonprofit?
Well, it always is a very long time. So today we're a nonprofit. I do believe there's a for-profit option that could be either a subsidiary of the nonprofit or separate. And I think it's a technology. You might think of it as venture capital, right? So information, it's really more early stage technology investing that is investing in for-profit entities that are in the technology space. Because back to Starlink. So if you have a disruptive or a step change technology, it creates tremendous opportunity for bolt-on or ancillary technologies. So I believe there's an opportunity to invest in a variety of these type of emerging tech companies. And because of our platform and our 35 million patients, 8 million patients a year, that makes LifeNet well positioned to be an influencer in that space, to really drive change. Because whether it's for-profit or nonprofit, we just want people to be healthier. We want them to live, right? And so what is the most effective ways for that to happen?
So when you think about capital, so obviously your business here in the U.S. is for-profit. LifeNet is non-for-profit. Mm-hmm. Fortescreen, which we can touch on a second, is for-profit. Mm-hmm. Why for-profit? When not-for-profit? How are you thinking about that?
Yeah, so as my friend Raymond, our early investor in LifeNet, says, it's all peas and carrots, right? It's all sort of mixed together in my mind. And so it's all, you know, back to my worldview is, as a Christian, it's all God's money, right? I personally think of all of the capital that I'm stewarding in the same bucket, right? It's all just capital. And some is best deployed in nonprofit vehicles, and some is better deployed in for-profit vehicles. Some should be saved, right? As the ants store up, right? Some should be spent, right? So this is the art of capital deployment. It is not a science. It's definitely an art. The answer is it just depends.
When you and Jonathan, for listeners, that's my younger brother, ventured into this Fortis Green initiative.
Yes.
Give us some of your thought process, maybe less about Fortis Green. And I mean, you can talk about why energy. Why did you decide I want to do another venture in Africa and I want to do it as a for-profit?
So remember, I'm back and forth to Africa every 3 months. You know, I'm there very often and I'm a business guy, right? I'm a businessman sort of first, second, and third. And so I'm looking at these contexts that I'm in, these countries that I'm in, that I'm exploring, and I'm looking around for opportunity being an entrepreneur. And it strikes me that there are opportunities to invest in these countries that help the people, that help the communities, and that can be profitable. And these are frontier markets. And it turns out that I love frontier markets. Who would have known? But they're super stimulating. They're very exciting. You actually can be relevant in a way in these frontier markets that I couldn't be in the U.S. Mm-hmm. And so I guess one way it's almost a force multiplier. When you bring your know-how, you can be more useful there than I could be in Texas, right? Where it's a fully giant energy market. Mm-hmm. Well, so that is how I thought about it. And that was what was energizing. And so we began looking around as early as 2012 for other places to invest. And I saw many, many different examples of potential businesses that could be invested in Africa. And the one I liked the best was something called Run of the River Hydropower. And I think I saw my first hydro site around 2012 in Rwanda. It was dramatic because I was like, wow, this is amazing. It generates return on investment for the investor. It turns the lights on, and electricity, of course, is a game changer for productivity, which raises the standard of living. It even provides jobs while you're building them, right? So it doesn't hurt the environment, these run of the river hydros. I was very excited about it. I looked at many, many others. And so when your brother and I decided to partner, the first decision was, where would he move his family to? What country? And I thought about it and I said, I think you should go to Rwanda. I think Rwanda is the right place to start for a number of reasons, everything down to traffic or lack of traffic, safety. Really, where can you be as an American and have a stable base where your family can flourish, where you sort of de-risk your home base. And it seemed to me that for Jonathan's family, that Rwanda would be a good place. He visited, chose Rwanda. And so that's how we picked Rwanda to base Fortis Green. And then what industry should we target? And I go back to the visit I had in 2012 in this Run of the River Hydro plant. In context with everything happening in the world in renewable energy, the whole entire energy transition, and that sort of drove us to renewable energy.
As you know, I just came back from Africa and I got to see the fruits of Jonathan and your efforts. I think we're now up to 19 projects in 6 countries. So, you know, it's exciting to sit here and have this discussion because what started probably with a LifeNet vision back has transitioned to renewable or run of the river hydro. And today it's a reality.
Yes.
I mean, you are providing power to churches, to schools, to hospitals, to tea manufacturing. You're an entrepreneur, so risk is probably, you embrace it more. What do you tell somebody who, and this is not a sales pitch, but hey, why go to Africa? Why would I, as an American, whether it's charitable dollars or whether it's investable dollars, that seems crazy. Why would I do that in Africa?
Back to something you said about risk. So I read somewhere, some smart person, I forget who, said that great entrepreneurs go for giant things, but then they de-risk them like crazy. So I love that quote because that's what I aspire to do, is go to change the world, go to big things, and then de-risk it as much as you can. And so that is what we're doing at Fortis Green. So why invest in Africa? Okay. Why renewable energy? Why Africa? Personally, I think it's smart, right? So why do I think it is smart? I think about risk. I think deeply about risk correlation and concentration of risk. And this came out of my experience of the Great Recession, right? So the Great Recession, what we didn't realize as a society in the U.S. was how correlated our risks were. And they were dramatically correlated. And this dragged down our entire economy. That has stuck with me. So how do we create uncorrelated income streams? And I believe the first place is international diversification. If we can get income from the developing world, that's even a step further on diversification. Think of, you know, there are a number of low probability, high consequence events that could happen in the United States. There are a number of them. Low probability, high consequence. Well, in my view, passive income from the developing world, is a risk mitigant against that. And so I think being overly concentrated in the United States is fragile. So what should your asset allocation be to the developing world? That's a matter of your view of the probability of shocks to the system in the US. That's going to change for every person. But my view is, it should be at least 10% in the developing world. I mean, that's just kind of how I see it. And so from a pure asset allocation, capitalist point of view, that I think that's the primary driver for why Africa. And then you go to, all right, where in Africa? Well, I believe what you want in Africa is cash flow. I don't believe it is terminal value and some sort of exit. I believe it's current cash flow. The two best places to create current predictable cash flow, in my judgment, are energy and rental income. We're playing in both of those spaces. So that's sort of how I think about it. And then you look at mega trends in the world. Demographics have been in the news lately, and demography, as we know, is destiny. And so we have a birth rate problem in most of the developed world. We do not in the developing world. And so you have radical population growth still in Africa. This is very good for their economy. You have rapid urbanization, and you have increases in per capita GDP at a pretty rapid rate. These three forces bring together, I believe, some of the most investable megatrends in the decades to come. Increased population, urbanization, and rising GDP per capita. And my view is they're bankable. So that's kind of the second reason why Africa, you're banking on these significant megatrends here. And then how then do you invest in, and to my earlier point, I think it's in cash flowing existing assets versus things that create value upon exit. I don't think that is a practical a way to go there.
Well, I appreciate hearing your thoughts. And, you know, I would just say, again, I love talking to you because you're not just a talker. You're a doer. And frankly, in this whole impact space, we need more doers. And even the way you talk about risk, you know, because most people automatically go to risk and you're like, yeah, it's a risk. And then I'm going to de-risk it as much as I can.
Yes.
And so I think it's great for people to hear that. Anything else you'd want to share with our listeners before we sign off?
Anytime that you can make an investment that is both smart and strategic and good for you as an investor, for your economics, and it is good for the investee and the place you're investing. You know, these are places that I think are good uses of capital. And the work we're doing, I think is spot at the intersection of that. And so, but again, whether it's for profit or nonprofit, you know, where can you invest that move the needle? Where can you invest that your investment matters? Where can you invest that your drop in the bucket matters to the world?
Again, thanks so much. We appreciate your time, your knowledge, and your willingness to share what you're doing in Africa. Don't forget to subscribe to A New Lens with Common Good Capital on your podcast app of choice. Please rate and review us on iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify. This will help new listeners find the show and hopefully put them on a path to a more fulfilling portfolio within the impact investing space. Till next time, I'm Jeff Schaefer.
This podcast is a production of Common Good Capital and does not constitute an offer or a solicitation of an offer. Such offer would only be made through a private placement memorandum. Prospective investors in private placement securities should be aware that making an investment is speculative and involves a high degree of risk, including the risk of losing all or a portion of an investment. Investments of this nature are illiquid and subject to substantial restrictions upon transferability.